I know it's kind of hard for us to think about people like Paul or even Timothy being afraid. There's not a lot that we know about the character Timothy, the person Timothy. But it does seem that there was a spirit of timidity about him. And I say that because of 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 6 and 7. And so this morning we're going to talk about what Paul had written to Timothy in the very beginning of that second letter that he wrote, as he talks about a spirit of timidity. So in 2 Timothy chapter 1, and verse 6 and 7, we read, as Paul wrote to him, "For this reason I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and love and self-control." In the Greek, there are two different words for fear. One we're familiar with, phobos, where we get the word phobia. Someone would say that I'm afraid of spiders, so I have arachnophobia. But the other word is dilos, and it's this idea of being afraid of something that may or may not happen. In other words, you're walking through the jungle, and the whole time you're thinking of the fear of a tiger jumping out and hurting you or killing you. That's that kind of fear. It's not a fear based on a reality. It's just a thing that you're thinking about. That's the word Paul uses here. And I think that's part of the idea. Whatever it was, we don't know. Timothy, one commentary I had read said, Timothy sounds like he was a mama's boy. And he might have been. We know that his mother and his grandmother were very instrumental in his having faith at all. Paul will say that in both 1st, 2nd Timothy. And we know some about the history of who Timothy was in the book of Acts, of course. And it might be, it might not be, it doesn't really matter. It just could be that he was the sort of timid person. He is left by Paul in the town of Ephesus to set things in order. That's what 1 Timothy is about. That's what 2 Timothy is about. That's what he writes as he writes the book of Ephesians, which Brother Ken had read to us from in Ephesians chapter 6 of putting on the whole armor of God and fighting the fight. That goes along with what Paul, I think, really was trying to encourage people like Timothy to do, is to be more of a fighter. It's not exactly the easy thing to do. And ultimately what I want to get to is this, that Satan wants us to be afraid. Satan wants us to be afraid. Satan is described by Peter as a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. We have cats, but I don't know much about lions. I have read that lions, as they hunt, don't make a lot of noise. I mean, they don't go roaring and you're like, oh, here comes a lion, and you're shaking because of that. He'll roar here and there, but what they usually do is they come on their prey, is right as they come on their prey, they sneak up on them, and then they make the loudest roar. You can look it up on YouTube or whatever and see how this works, but it's great because they're right on the animal they're getting ready to kill, and they roar. And the reason they do is it's paralyzing. The animal doesn't go, whoa, kill him. It goes, huh, and just stands there. It's like in traffic around here when somebody honks, everybody does this. They just stop. You don't, what's going on? It's almost always the guy that's 9 or 10 cars back honking to let everybody know the light just turned green 2 milliseconds ago, right? And I don't like that, but that's what it is. But it's arresting more than anything. That's what Peter is trying to say. And Satan really does want us to fear. Look over in Luke 12. Luke 12, verses 4 through 7, when Paul, that's not Paul, I'm sorry. There is a point where Paul wrote everything, I know. Luke 12, verse 4 through 7, Jesus is speaking and he says, "I tell you, my friends, do not fear those who kill the body and after that they have nothing more they can do." I don't know about you, there are a lot of people who are afraid of other people. Why? Because they can kill you. I mean, you know, we think that. Well, they might kill you. Yeah? Jesus says, don't be afraid of that person who could only do that. He says, "I will warn you whom to fear. Fear him who, after he's killed, has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him." And we know he's talking about God. "Are not 5 sparrows sold for 2 pennies, and not one of them is forgotten before God? Why, even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not. You are of more value than many sparrows." He says, don't fear. And I know it's easy to say, well, I'm not going to be afraid. But you think of what David wrote in Psalm 23 and verse 4. "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, He said, I will fear no evil. It's not no fear at all. It's just, I'm not going to fear bad things because I have, as my God, Jehovah. He is able in any and every circumstance to care for me. I mean, you think, what's the worst thing that can happen? The worst thing isn't being dead. The worst thing is being dead and cast into hell. That's what Jesus' point is in this specific context. Look over in Romans chapter 8, if you will. Paul is talking about how God is our Father and we cry out to Him, Abba, Father. Why? We've been adopted, you know. You can think of the idea of being able to call on somebody. When my dad worked in a college, it was really interesting that, you know, he was busy and I could call him practically anytime I wanted. And the only reason I could get through to him is because it was his son calling. And sometimes his secretary would answer and say, well, he's in the middle of a meeting. I don't know what the meeting's about. It was something I really did need to talk to him about. I didn't always try to interrupt. I would just say, look, just tell him it's his son. And she goes, well, hang on a second. I'll go get him. I didn't ask to stop the meeting. The only reason I could do that was because of my relationship to him. That's it. And that's what's going on here, like in Romans 8, starting there, verse 14. All who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God. Not just people who say they love God, but people who are being led by the Spirit of God. We read, we do. We're not hearers only, we're doers of the Word. Verse 15, you did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear. They came from a spot of fear. Obedience to God doesn't mean you go back to that fear. You have received a spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we are crying out, Abba, Father! The Spirit Himself is bearing witness with our spirit. We're children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God, fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with Him in order that we may be glorified with Him. And then he goes on in verse 18, I consider that the sufferings of this present time aren't worth comparing to the glory that is to be revealed to us. You've got to put it in perspective, the proper perspective. Don't fear. We have God as our Father. And it is a special relationship. I can tell you, when my own kids were growing up, if a kid screamed, all parents don't always go running to the kid. I mean, we learn our kids. You can hear and you know if it's your kid, the way they cry out, and you go running. Why? Because it's your kid. And you can think of God that way. His children should have, and they do have, a special relationship. No matter what it is we're going through, we have God as our Father. We can call on Him for help. In 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1, a conclusion is drawn. 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1. He is making a conclusion of verse 1 that is connected to the last few verses of chapter 6. Like at verse 16, what agreement has the temple of God with idolatry or idols? We're the temple of the living God. As God said, I will make my dwelling with them and walk among them. I'll be their God and they'll be my people. Therefore, go out from their midst. Be separate from them, says the Lord. Touch no unclean thing and I'll welcome you. I will be a father to you. And notice, you shall be sons and daughters to me, says the Lord Almighty. Since we have these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from every defilement of the body and spirit, bringing holiness to completion in the fear of God. Now, I know we see fear of God, we're like, but you're saying we're not supposed to be afraid. There's a difference and a distinction that would clearly be made between the fear that a son has for his father and the fear that a slave might have for his master. I know we don't live in the master-slave thing, and it's good that we don't, but you can imagine a master treating a slave like a chair, right? The chair breaks, what do? You throw it away. And there were people who were masters over slaves who would treat the slave like a piece of furniture, and when they were done with him, they were done with him. That would be a fear. You know, the idea of this man may kill me if I don't do the right thing or don't do it the way his whim seems to go today. But that's different. I've never in all my life, and I've done some crazy things where my dad's gotten really angry at me, but I have never feared for even a moment. I'm checking that in my own brain. Never mind, it might have been one moment. But really, seriously, I've never thought this man's getting ready to kill me. Now, I know what parents say. I am so angry, you know, and
I could kill you.
They don't really mean that, and they shouldn't say that, but I never have thought that of my own father. Why? Because he's my dad. And I don't want us to just look at God as dad. I don't want us to bring that idea down. He is an elevated idea of father. Spiritual father who always has our best interest in mind. Always. He doesn't, you know, fail in some things. He doesn't try. He just does the right and the best thing for us. But the fear of God means he's still God. It's not no fear at all. It's proper fear. Reverence is sometimes how the word is translated to carry the idea of not just being afraid of somebody, but of understanding proper relationship and proper response. So, yeah, it's fear of God. Why? Because he is God. And if we fear him, because we know, like Luke 12, Jesus said, don't fear the one who can kill your body. Can't do anything more. Fear the one who can kill your body and cast your soul into hell. He's the one you really should fear. Why? Because he's God. And we're all going to stand before him in judgment. That's ultimately what it's about. In Hebrews 2, this is a passage we probably use quite a bit during the COVID time. It's insane, and I know we're years down the road, and yet it's only recently that, you know, government administrations are saying, all right, we're past it all. But, you know, you think Hebrews 2, 14 to 18, why did Jesus come to the earth? He came to save us from sin. But more than that, look at 2, 14 through 18, where the writer says, since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, that's our experience, we are fleshly. He himself, that is Jesus himself, likewise partook of the same things, which means flesh and blood. Why? That through death, he came to die. I mean, that was his job, was to come to die. That through death, he might destroy, notice, the one who has the power of death. Not destroy the power of death, but destroy the one who has the power of death. That is the devil. And deliver all those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery. The COVID mentality was basically, we're going to get sick and we might die. And I was one of those. And I know there were a lot of others who were like, you know, we're going to die anyway. I mean, we're going to die. I don't know what we're going to die from. We can't control much of anything. I mean, we don't like to think about this. And I know sometimes when we come together to worship, we have this kind of in the background of understanding why we worship God. Why? Because we know we're going to stand before him in judgment. You know, Ron, in his prayer, mentioned eternity. You know, this is a drop in the bucket. Our lifetime here is nothing compared to the wide ocean of eternity. And he's right. But you kind of step back and think, this is our life. We don't want to just die. No, we don't. But at the same time, we can be responsible and understand, what does Hebrews 9:27 tell us? It is appointed for men to die once, and then comes the judgment. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen today. We just don't know. Should we live in fear of death? No, it's a reality. It is appointed. By whom? God. It is appointed for us that we die once, and then comes judgment. And so what did Jesus do? He came that he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver all those who through fear of death we're subject to lifelong slavery. We're not subject to lifelong slavery anymore. Why? Because of Jesus. Surely it's not angels that he's helping. He's helping the offspring of Abraham. Therefore, he had to be made like his brothers in every respect so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For because he himself has suffered when being tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. He's able to help us. Why? Because he went through what we have gone through, or what we're going through. And he conquered death. In my mind, I think of Jesus kicking death in the teeth almost. I mean, that's really the point. He won. And again, the writer here doesn't say just delivering us through the fear or from the fear of death, but he delivered us from Satan, who has that power. He destroyed the one who had the power of death by doing what? By overcoming it. That doesn't mean death doesn't have a sting. It does. When we lose someone and we're Christians, we don't not cry. We do, because of grief. We don't, you know, step back and be stoic. We're not. Jesus wept in John 11 when his friend Lazarus had died. He'd been told he wept. It's one of the most famous of all passages. Why? Because it's the shortest verse in the entire Bible in the English, right? Jesus wept. Two whole words. I remember as a kid being told, you need to go home and you need to learn a memory verse. Come back. How many kids came back with John 11:35, right? Jesus wept. It's a whole verse. But it's one of the most stunning verses. Why would Jesus cry? He knew that pain. It didn't mean it was permanent, just he knew that pain. I got stung a few months ago by a bee, and it hurt. I didn't cry, but I did say, ouch, and it hurt for days. That doesn't take away the pain. It just means there's not a permanence to it, certainly at all. I had read recently of a man who illustrated it as we drop somebody off at the airport and they go fly away, except they don't come back. That's what death is. We're going to see him again, but it's painful at that moment, for sure. But the fear of death is not there anymore, can't be there anymore. Which leads us to the last passage here in this list of 1 John 4, which is what I was talking about before. Perfect love, John writes, casts out fear, throws it out. Why? It doesn't have a proper place. Not with us as Christians. We have concerns about death, yes. When someone is sick and dying, we pray that they don't die. These passages and these ideas aren't, don't pray for that. But there are times, honestly, as a Christian, I have seen people who are on their deathbed. And someone prays that the Lord save them. And I have a struggle with that because it's like, as a Christian, I should be afraid of death. Again, Psalm 23:4 comes to mind. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. The Lord is my shepherd. He will protect me. His rod, his staff. I mean, are we believers or not? That just indicates we should grow in our faith, certainly. You remember when Jesus told a man who said that his, I believe it was his daughter that was dying, and Jesus said, do you have faith? Do you believe? And he says, I do. Increase my faith. 1 John 4. Let's look at verse 17 through 19 where John writes through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, by this love is perfected with us so that we, notice, may have confidence for the day of judgment. I think this is a very important point that when we stand before God in judgment, it's not that we're not going to stand before God in judgment, but we may have confidence. Why? Let me ask you this. If your dad is a judge, I don't know how many of y'all have ever had a dad who's a judge. I don't know if I've known anybody in my life whose father was a judge. I mean, I've known a judge here and there. But, you know, it's like a few years ago I had to do jury duty. And it was really interesting. That judge I ran into at a hockey game. I went up to him and talked to him. Why? Because I sat in his courtroom, you know. I knew him that way. Can you imagine if your dad's the judge? I know this guy. I mean, in 1 John 2, he says, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. We have access, really, is kind of the idea, as Romans 5, 6, 7, and 8 will tell us. Here in 1 John 4, he says, we have confidence for the day of judgment because as He is, so also are we in this world. There's no fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear, for fear has to do with punishment. And whoever fears has not been perfected in love. It's not that there's no fear at all. It's just, again, this sense of He is God. But if God, you know, like Abraham is described as the friend of God. James says that. Abraham was God's friend. Why? Because he did what he was commanded. As Andy indicated this morning when we were partaking of the Lord's Supper, Genesis 22, God tested him. And in testing him, I think we understand God's intention was for the best for Abraham and Isaac. Isaac is a man of great faith. We're told in the book of Romans, actually, which is really interesting. The perspective is not in the Old Testament, but it is provided in the New in Romans 4 that Paul does write Romans 4, but it's Abraham who supposed that he could raise his son from the dead. In other words, we don't know that in Genesis, but we know that in Romans, that Abraham thought, you know, God can raise him. Which is really weird to me because resurrection was not a part of the general thinking. But that's what Abraham thought according to Romans 4. Because there's no fear in love. perfect love casts out fear, throws it out. That's really the idea. And as I've already been, you know, talking about Psalm 23:4, even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. So why do we fear? Why do we fear? And as I have here before, maybe it's a lack of trust. And we say a lack of faith. I would say clearly lack of faith. We don't trust maybe the way we should. Look over in Hebrews 6. Abraham, again, is the focus of the few verses we read here. Hebrews 6, verse 13. The writer is trying to admonish his audience by saying at the end of chapter 5, solid food belongs to those who are mature, those who by reason of use have their senses trained by practice. So if you don't use it, you lose it, sort of thing. And he goes on saying we should leave the elementary doctrine about Christ and move on to maturity. And then he comes to this point as verse 13, when God, he made a promise to Abraham, since he had no one greater by whom to swear, he swore by himself saying, I will bless you and multiply you. And so Abraham, having waited, obtained the promise. People swear by something greater than themselves, and in all their disputes, an oath is final for confirmation. So when God desired to show more convincingly to the heirs of the promise the unchangeable character of his purpose, he guaranteed it with an oath, so that by two unchangeable things, that is his promise and his oath, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled for refuge might have what? A little bit of encouragement. You read that, you're reading wrong. That we who have fled for refuge might have strong encouragement to hold fast to the hope set before us. We have this as a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul, a hope that enters into the inner place behind the curtain where Jesus has gone as forerunner on our behalf, having become a high priest after the order of Melchizedek, which is really what this writer at this point is really, that's what he's wanting to talk about, is that. We have a forerunner. We have somebody who went on our behalf behind the curtain. That should give us confidence when we stand before the judge. It's not somebody we don't know. It's somebody we do know. And if we've lived the way we should. I'm not saying lives of perfection, because nobody can do that. One person did that, and he had a purpose in doing that. That is Jesus. He died in a perfect life. Why? Because of sacrifice. That's what it is. Because of love. And God used that perfect life in a sacrifice for us so that we who aren't perfect can rely on His perfection. We are justified in Him. We stand before the judge not saying, look what all the good things we've done, but relying on God and His love for His Son, relying on Jesus and His love for us. It's not about us and what we've earned. It's what God has done as a gift of grace through His Son, Jesus. That's why we have confidence. That's why we don't fear. Because everything that God has done, if we do what God is commanding, it's not because we're earning, it's because we're doing that which we know the commander's commanded. We trust Him. I mean, that's what it is. Luke 17:10, we are unworthy slaves. We've done that which was our duty to do. As Jesus explains it there, Luke 17, verse 10. Talking about Psalm 23, there's a corollary in Psalm 118, verse 5 through 9, as I have here in front of you. The psalmist, I think here we don't know who it is, but the psalmist says, out of my distress, I called on the Lord. And that's usually when we do call. Why? Because we're in distress. We need help. In my distress, I called on the Lord. The Lord answered me and set me free. So the Lord is on my side. I will not fear. What can man do to me? Now, I'm not saying this is what Jesus thought about in Luke 12, but this is something that I'm thinking about connected to Luke 12. Don't fear the one who kills the body, can't do anything more. Fear the one who killed the body and cast your soul to hell. Here, Psalm 118, I will not fear. What can man do to me? The Lord's on my side as my helper. I shall look and triumph on those who hate me. It is better to take refuge in the Lord, which is what that's the same word that is used in Hebrews 6, by the way. We have refuge in Him. We take refuge and have strong consolation, strong encouragement. Here he talks about it is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in man. It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes. Every election cycle, I know people, we live in a country where people are like, this next administration, they're going to save us all. No, they're not. If your reliance is on people or princes or administrations or whatever, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. It scared me. So if you're sound asleep, I do apologize. But what I'm trying to say is you can't trust people. And we know that. We know that. And yet sometimes we still strive to. God is who we should trust no matter what in everything. As the writer of Hebrews uses, I think, in that idea, Hebrews 13, 5 and 6, where he says, keep your life free from the love of money. Be content with what you have, for he has said, what? I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we can confidently say, Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? That's a quotation from Psalm 118, 5 and 6, or 5 through 9, actually. So think about that. We trust him. Does that mean life's always going to be easy? No. Isn't that what Paul means when in Philippians 4, 12, he says, I know how to deal with hard times, and I know how to deal with good times. It's not just Paul says in verse 13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Like, that means I can do anything. You know, weightlifters for Jesus sort of thing. That's actually the verse they used in Virginia. They had the weightlifters for Jesus. They lift things and they drop the dumbbells and they would say, I can do all things through Christ. That's not what Jesus meant. That's not what Paul means. Just weird stuff. That means that in times where things are good, and I think this is where you and I as Americans, we don't realize always how prosperous we really are. How many of y'all are worried about lunch? Now, I say that. You might go, well, I don't know where I'm going to eat. But are you worried? I mean, really, that you're not going to eat? How many of us haven't eaten for days? I've never, ever had to worry about that. I don't think I've ever in my life thought, I'm not going to eat. I mean, as a kid, you probably do think that, you know. But in seriousness, I've never thought I might think, what is it that I will eat? If we all went to the same restaurant, I'd freak them out, I know, but if we all went, we'd have so many options to choose from. We might not like the restaurant, but we know we can find something. We don't lack. And I think the hardest part sometimes is because we don't lack, we trust our prosperity. That's what Hebrews 13 is talking about. We're not to be covetous people who are just trying to get more and more. It's the idea, I trust God. What can man do to me? I want us to understand, and the point I'm trying to make is, it's not just about fearing bad things. It's being confident when things are good. That's what God told in the Old Testament, in the book of Deuteronomy. That's what he told the people in Deuteronomy 8. I've been testing you because I don't want you to go into the land of milk and honey and think, we did this. We have this beautiful land, this wonderful land, this bountiful land. Look what we got. We did this. God gives them basically a history where they do forget him. Sometimes I think we forget God because things are okay. We're not in distress. God wants us to remember him at all times, not just in times of distress, but in those good times. 2 Timothy 1:12, Paul was in distress. He's in jail. He writes to Timothy and he says, for this reason, I am suffering these things. Nevertheless, I'm not ashamed. I know whom I believed and I am persuaded he is able. Notice Paul didn't say, I can do anything. This isn't Philippians 4:13 really, but it is. Because he says, I can do all things, whether it's a good time or a bad time. Here he says, I'm persuaded that he is able to keep what I've committed to him till that day. I don't trust going to heaven because of me. I really don't. I mean, at all. And it's not because I don't trust the things I have and haven't done. It's I trust God. I trust him as the commander. I've done what he said, yes. So can I trust him? Yes. I don't trust my ability. I trust his. And that's maybe to some people, you know, the difference between potato, patata, but the idea really truly is, it's not trust in myself, it's trust in him. The only thing I trust in myself is to listen to him, you know, and to do what he's telling me. And so as we close Ephesians 6, 10, and 11, this is where Brother Ken was reading to us in that larger context of taking up the whole armor of God. Why? That we may be able to stand against, I think the New King James there used the wiles of the devil. That's where Wile E. Coyote comes from. You think of Bugs Bunny and the Wile E. Coyote. Wile, the wiles of the devil. The word that is used there in the Greek is where we get our word method. It's the methods of Satan, or the schemes, as some translations use. But what is this? Be strong in the Lord, he says, in the strength of his might. We're not strong because of him. We're not strong because of ourselves. We're strong because of him. So, verse 11 says, put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. Why can we defeat him? It's not because of our own ability. Talking about Bugs Bunny, this comes to mind sometimes. There was one of the cartoons they had where this little tiny, like chihuahua-looking dog went around barking and stuff, and nobody was scared of that dog until his protector came up, which is his like gigantic English bulldog, you know. If you don't remember the comic, that's fine. In my own mind, that's how I remember it. This little dog, he'd go yapping at the cats. And the cats would like, oh, no bother, this is a puppy. And they'd get ready to go swat him, and the big dog showed up behind the little dog. And they would just start shaking, you know. And they'd leave the little dog alone, and the little dog walked around like he was something else. Why? He didn't know he had the big dog with him the whole time, and that's when the turn comes and little dog didn't have the big dog. You know, it's a cartoon, so bad things happen until the big dog comes back. God is our big dog, and I don't mean to bring him down. I'm just saying he is our protector. He is the one that when Satan sees him, he flees. Don't fear what man can do to you. Don't fear. We read in the news, we hear the news, we have constant access to a world that seems to be falling apart. And we can either go, oh, it's falling apart, or just say, yep, it's falling apart. Because people are trusting in themselves and all. I trust God, I'm not worried about it. It may be there are hard economic times ahead for a country that is going in the wrong direction. God may punish us as a country. But in the end of it, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. It's easy, I know, to run through a memory verse, but eventually, I would hope, if we keep that in our mind, that no matter what comes, the death of someone close to us, just bad times in life, because they're going to come. Sun doesn't always shine. I mean, there are things we know. We all know. We all have these experiences of life. They're not all great. We know the one who is helping us. Jesus helps us, and we can overcome all things through him. The song that Brother George has gotten for us this morning as we close, God is calling the prodigal. And if you are the prodigal, he's calling you. We have all the same access to him. He wants us to want him. He wants us. He wishes that all would be saved. He doesn't make us be saved. He wants that. He won't make you. He won't force you into it. If you love him, then why put it off? There is an urgency because we just don't know what this day is going to bring. We don't want to know what tomorrow is going to bring. But we can be ready that come what may, we trust him. If you've not been baptized, this is your opportunity right now. Please come forward as we stand and sing.